Oh, welcome into another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting again with Peter Hanks, analyst over at Daily FX. Now, I've had Peter on the show a couple times, and I liked what he had to say, so I'm bringing Peter on more regularly as a commentator, more in a generalist sense, looking at broad markets and different markets and just assessing, you know, what's driving these markets and trying to understand what is going to drive these markets moving forward. Let's start off with the U.S. equity markets here, Peter, and the sense that the buy the dip mentality still feels pretty prevalent in these markets, but it has been a pretty crazy start to 2020. Now, a lot of that is on the back of those geopolitical tensions between the U.S. and Iran, but there are still these other uncertainties that will drive these markets, I think, for a much longer period of time. These drivers being trade uncertainty and also central bank policy. Take us through some of your thoughts on how the stocks, how the general market started this week and what you're looking for here, even just this week with some news events right around the corner.
Yeah. Hey, Corey, thanks for having me again. Very happy to be back. And I completely agree. It was an absurd start to the year. We just got into 2020 and already threats of war and, you know, on the brink. But for stocks, I think this week is shaping up to be a very, very pivotal one. As you mentioned, the buy the dip mentality has been pretty much unfading. And I think if there is some event that could really derail that a little bit in the medium to short term, it will be this trade deal signing at the White House on the 15th. We've seen this story kind of unfold throughout the last 2 years or year and a half, really. Now we're getting a trade deal, which has been very bullish. I think that's been a driver in the last 2 months or the last month and a half. But we don't have any concrete details on what that deal is going to look like. The talking point has kind of been that the US and China were trying to get the deal translated. I don't really buy that too much. I think the two nations have enough resources to work together a translation in pretty quick fashion. So I think there's a big risk here if this trade deal does come through the pipeline and analysts get their eyes on it and they say, well, there's, you know, really not too much in here. That could be a huge or very large catalyst for a pullback here in the medium term.
So you think the markets are pricing in something better than what we are going to see? I know it's hard to say what we are going to see, but all of a sudden we were hearing about this phase one deal during the fourth quarter of last year, and we hadn't really heard of anything about, you know, different phases. It makes sense, though, because of maybe how big or the large scale that is trying to be undertaken with these trade talks. But even after this deal, A, you think that it's not going to be as good as the markets think, but then what's next? Is the market then just going to be, okay, well, what's coming next? Give us something more?
I think it is going to be buy the rumor, sell the news type phenomenon here. Like you said, you know, this phase one deal kind of came out of nowhere. And then just last week we had U.S. officials saying, well, once we get phase one done, you know, look how fast phase two is going to come. It's going to be right here. And, you know, great progress on both ends. I would say, you know, let's not get too ahead of ourselves here. I think there's just immense issues at play if we're talking about intellectual property and, you know, the two global superpowers. Really, these are deep-seated issues, and you know, slicing it up into phases I think is smart, but it really comes down to when are these big issues going to be tackled and what substance and, you know, in what way are they going to be handled, and we don't have any information on that stuff yet.
Do you see any of these major instances or major events taking place even before the U.S. election wraps up here? Is this something that we'll need to wait until, I guess that would be next year then?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's coming to the forefront of more and more investors' minds, because it does come down to, well, you know, what is driving someone to make a deal? And if you look at the U.S. administration side, President Trump certainly vying for re-election. So if he has this tool at his disposal, or this, I guess, conflict that he can use as a tool, I think given his first term, he would certainly like to kind of hold a phase two deal out in front of the media and in front of the markets and then say, well, look at the stock market's performance since I've been president. You know, we're making great progress on all these steep issues. I think that would certainly fit within his wheelhouse. So there may be a delay, and I believe it was Friday, this past Friday, one official said, you know, phase two is coming down the line. Another one said, we may actually wait until the 2020 election. And on China's side, they have expressed a willingness to just play the long game. And that is certainly one of their strengths. So I don't think we'll get too much beyond a phase one deal until after the 2020 election.
Yeah, and that long game is one of the things that the market isn't such a big fan of. The market wants to see progress and progress happen quickly. But one other driver for these markets, and I think it's going to be consistent throughout this year, throughout many years, is central bank policy. And what, especially right now, the Fed has been doing when it comes to the repo market. And it's not calling this QE. It seems like QE to me is the Fed is injecting so much money into the system and expanding its balance sheet very quickly. But that, I think, is another supporter to these markets. Take us through your thoughts on how the Fed is also playing its role.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Fed's official stance is, well, it's not QE, but if it looks like QE, sounds like QE, smells like QE, and their balance sheet is expanding at this rapid of a pace, I think it's pretty safe to say that's exactly what it is. And if you just look at a chart of their balance sheet since September, it's very, very steep, and it's growing quite aggressively. So it comes down to whether or not the Fed is willing to continue that. On Thursday, they're set to announce their schedule for the coming months. Last week, Vice Chairman Richard Clarida kind of revealed that they were willing to extend it into April. So that will be a tailwind that'll be there for some time. I think we're getting into maybe even mortgaging our future here a little bit. I'm not a huge fan of all this QE, all these low rates, but I guess that's a larger issue for a larger time frame.
Yeah, and it's something that we don't really get a say in, but the fact of the matter is there is this buy the dip mentality and this Fed has your back mentality when it comes to equity markets in general. But how is this also impacting the U.S. dollar? We've seen a general top. Maybe it's a top in October in the U.S. dollar. This all does kind of curiously coincide with these repo market actions. But the dollar has been in a little bit of a downtrend after putting in a pretty consistent uptrend for over a year and a half. What's your take on the dollar and where that could be going?
Yeah, I think the making mention of that top in October is very important. Whether or not that's the top for a longer term is now the question. It does follow or lag a little bit the Fed's restart of not QE, quote unquote, that dollar saw its strength. Now it's looking like as the Fed is becoming more willing and express that willingness to expend their balance sheet even more, the dollar is set here for a little bit of a pullback. And I think dollar weakness could be a theme to watch in 2020 until we do see a leveling off in Fed policy. But it also becomes a question of, well, if you look at the dollar basket, that is heavily weighted to the euro. So if there's euro weakness as well, it's, you know, that's the difficulty with currency trading sometimes. They're pairs, so weakness in one area doesn't necessarily mean strength in another. And for the European side of things, there are talks of fiscal stimulus in the works, but for the time being, it doesn't look like the euro is going to be too strong either. So very, very big questions coming up here in 2020.
Yeah, that's the big balance is if you think or want to believe that the U.S. dollar is going to be in a downtrend, then you need to think that there's going to be some stability in Europe. And that's just something we haven't seen for quite a while. And quite honestly, things don't seem to be trending in necessarily the right direction for Europe broadly. Now, one other market that has been very volatile, it's been a crazy market just in the first couple weeks of trading, that's been the precious metals. Gold had a just spike up to about 1600, arguably on the back of those geopolitical issues, but it is pulling back now. However, hey, that spike to 1600 did take us over the high of last year, 2019, into a level that we hadn't seen since 2013. What are your thoughts on the gold market?
Yeah, that higher high last week above 1600, I think is very important because it kind of starts to paint a picture of a broader uptrend here. So we have that high, as you mentioned, in early September 2019, and we popped up again last week. And put that in relation to the bottom we got in July 2019 and then the little retracement we got in December. A series of higher highs and higher lows. So just from a price perspective, that's very bullish and pretty encouraging. Now, if you shift that over to the fundamental side, some of the issues we've already discussed with the Fed expanding their balance sheet, I think inflation may rear its head sometime here. I mean, you would have to really think that just going back to the basic laws of supply and demand, if you just keep injecting supply of money, eventually inflation is going to take hold, and that could be a big driver here for gold. On the shorter term, I think the tensions in US and Iran did have a bullish effect. I'd expect a little bit of a pullback now that those tensions have eased. It seems like both sides have stood down for now. So maybe we'll come back in to make another higher low here on gold, maybe the 1525 area or the 1500 area. That's one asset I'll be watching very closely in the weeks to come.
Now, do you think this recent volatility in gold that really started, let's say, mid last year, 2019, do you think that's positive for a market that was just so boring for about 6 years when it traded in that range?
Yes. As a trader myself and someone that writes about the markets every single day, I cannot get enough volatility. It's, you know, exciting, and it is very exciting when you see a long-term channel like that broken. So looking at gold specifically, it kind of depends what your time frame is. So I just made mentions of some higher highs and higher lows. Those are just on a six-month basis, but if you pull out even more and look back, you know, 8 years, 7 years, something like that, this also is a sign of another bullish break higher. So longer term gold strength, certainly in the cards. And that's the way I would lean on this market at the time being.
All right, Peter, we're going to wrap it up there. Very interesting comments. Thanks for taking some time early on this year and sharing your thoughts on, yeah, what already has been a pretty crazy start to 2020. Hopefully it does calm down a little bit, but some of these trends, even on the back of these winding down tensions between the Middle East and the U.S., we still can, it seems like, bank on a few of these trends continuing. Peter, great chatting with you. Everyone, click that link below. Go visit the Daily FX website where you can follow along with what Peter is writing. Have a great rest of your week there, Peter.
Thanks for having me, Corey. Always a pleasure.